Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:38 PM that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 16th, and I thought we'd kick off today and look at the Shenzhen B shares, because these are privately held companies by and large, and there's no banks included in the index, so they don't get the same degree of support from the central government and the state-owned sector that, for example, the A-share index gets. The fact that we're seeing relative weakness in this index is not especially encouraging. It is below the trend mean. It has a sequence of lower rally highs. It has not been able to rally. And it's particularly noteworthy when we compare it with just on a relative basis to the CSI 300, which is the large caps and dominated by the state-owned sector. And yet here also we see that there is some resistance around this 4,000 level. 4,000 has been an area of resistance on multiple occasions since 2015, so it is a big psychological barrier over which the price would need to rise in order to, I think, confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The renminbi was also weaker in here today, and I continue to think it's very unlikely that we're going to see the renminbi strengthen through 7 anytime soon. When we look at the H share index in Hong Kong of Hong Kong listed Chinese shares, it was in positive territory, and we are seeing a bounce from around the 10,000 level. There is still that sequence of lower rally highs, but we have a higher reaction low. There is a bit of a triangular pattern starting to form. Generally, when we see that, we can anticipate that there is going to be an emphatic break, but it doesn't tell us in what direction it's going to be. I do think that the 10,000 level is an awfully big psychological level, and a failure at it would signal a retest of perhaps even the lows seen in 2016. So what happens in terms of China is a big question. When we look at the continuous commodity index, then it is now trading within a point of that psychological 400 point level. It has so far been pausing around here for now about a month. It is above the trend mean. The sequence of lower rally highs is still intact. It does need to sustain a move up and through the 400 point level in order to break the downtrend and confirm that we have a low of more than short-term significance. What I found particularly interesting is that when we look at a number of commodity-related currencies, then we have a picture of underperformance. The Norwegian krone, which obviously is heavily influenced by the oil market, is pushing on to new lows against the US dollar. It's at a new all-time low against the euro. The Brazilian real is also testing its lows. It was a little bit steadier in here today, but not to any real measurable degree. It still looks like a bullish consolidation from the perspective of a dollar bull. When we look at the Australian dollar, the value has pretty much been stagnant over the last 10 weeks, but there is still a clear sequence of lower rally highs. The New Zealand dollar is also at least steady in the region of the lows from back in 2015, and there is a deep oversold condition, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to demonstrate that this is more than simply short-term steadying in the region of a previous low. I thought the outliers in here are the Russian ruble, which is really quite steady and is still trading stronger against the US dollar. And of course, Russia has been buying a lot of gold, and that may be helping to support the currency. What's also interesting is the Mexican peso. It's been strengthening over the course of the last few sessions. This is another instance of a triangular pattern. We have a clear sequence or a clear downtrend from the peak, and also a sequence of higher reaction lows. It's now coming back down to test that sequence of higher reaction lows for the dollar, and a break in either direction is likely to be catalytic in terms of investor sentiment. Of course, Mexico would benefit enormously from trade relations globally, particularly with the USA, easing. So there is, I think there is certainly an argument for keeping an eye on the Mexican market. And when we think about the Mexbol index, it has rebounded from a pretty depressed level, particularly relative to the big declines we've seen over the last couple of years, and it is now back above the trend mean. But the general weakness of commodity-related currencies, and perhaps also viewed from the perspective of currencies that are rather influenced by Chinese growth, well, they are all relatively weak. And what that is suggestive of is pressure on the Chinese economy. And that is one of the factors that seems to be getting little mention. We've also seen some data being released on a number of media outlets today about the flow of cash coming out of China picking up in the first half of this year. We haven't had the data for the third quarter released yet, but considering that the renminbi was devalued in the third quarter, it's looking increasingly likely that there are going to be a large number of people heading for overseas destinations for their cash. And that is also representative of less faith in the administration in China being able to sustain growth. I'm posting a very interesting report from Bernard Tan in Comment of the Day today. I think it's well worth taking the time to read. It's making some very good arguments about demographics and the number of students graduating and tertiary education in emerging markets and the contribution that that has to innovation and growth, all of which are, I think, very important characteristics from trying to spot secular bull markets. But governance is equally important, and governance is the big arbiter in whether individuals and society at large has the capability to achieve their productivity goals. And without the benefit of improving standards of governance, that becomes an increasingly difficult objective to achieve. So what's happening in terms of China and growth and the outlook for governance are, I think, very important factors in here. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of governance and the UK, well, the pound was again in positive territory today. It was off its highs a little. We're going to have a big decision made on Saturday, and there is the potential that we are coming towards the end of the Brexit saga. The currency market is certainly pricing this in. Now, the bigger question is whether that optimism is well founded. But certainly, we have had a break back above the trend, mainly for the pound against the dollar. It's clear confirmation of support around the 120 area, and there is a short-term oversold condition, which has replaced the short-term. Overbought condition, which has replaced the short-term oversold condition. When we look at the FTSE 250, I think this is a picture of an index that has bounced clearly from the region of the trend mean, a big upper dynamic last week, follow through this week. This is a pretty bullish looking chart here. We've certainly got the trend mean turning back up again, and there is the potential here that the domestic UK economy is going to benefit from a steadier environment and less uncertainty. Uncertainty is abhorrent to investors and markets generally. So then a clearing up of any uncertainty with regard to the political environment in the UK is likely to be beneficial to the stock market. Now, when we think about the European markets, that's, I think, an equally important argument. And the Euro Stoxx index has pushed up and out of this short, well, really this range that has been in place now for 6 months. So that is also, I think, a market that has the potential to push on the upside. Now, the S&P 500 has been largely range bound over most of the last few months, but it is right in the region of the upper side of its range, and it was pretty quiet in here today. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was in negative territory. We're seeing a little bit of reticence to sustain a move up and out of this trading environment that's been present now for the last 6 months. There's probably going to have to be clear substantive evidence of a thawing of relations in terms of the trade war in order for investors to galvanize around the idea that we're going to see a major move on the upside here, and we're probably not there quite yet. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of the bond market, well, 10-year Treasury yields were a little bit easier in here today, but I think the most important things that we can say about the trend is that we did have an acceleration on the downside. It was a very consistent trend all the way down from the peak above 3% in November of last year. We had one range below another. The pace of the decline accelerated in August. We had a rip-roaring rally in the first couple of weeks of September. That tested the sequence of lower rally highs and also the lower side of the overhead trading range. What we now have is a higher reaction low, and the yield is pushing back up. If we can see it push above the, at least up towards the 2% level, well, then that will break the downtrend. And then we will have clear evidence that 2%, or excuse me, 1.5% is the peak for bond yields. The Federal Reserve is probably a little reticent to cut interest rates beyond perhaps one more cut. The stock market is signaling that there is the potential for additional upside. What we did see, however, today is waning retail sales, and the consumer has been the stalwart in terms of supporting the U.S. economy. The fiscal impetus from the Trump tax cuts and additional spending is starting to wane. That will put pressure on the Federal Reserve to cut rates again, perhaps this month or next month. But the bigger picture here is that the U.S. economy is still expanding, and there is the potential that when we think about what's going on around the world, we're seeing a turn towards additional stimulus. And now the big question is whether that is too late or whether it will be strong enough, fast enough, to curtail slowing growth. And I think that's part of the reason why we have this reticence to support the oil price, despite the fact that there is a really very large backwardation that is present, and that is evident all the way out to contracts maturing in 2022. OPEC and Russia are cutting back on supply, and because of that backwardation, the shale drillers have no incentive to go out and hedge so that they can borrow the money now to drill those expensive hydraulic fracturing and multi-pronged horizontal drilling wells. The oil price continues to steady around this $55 area, and we're not far off the break-evens for some of those shale operations, but it's just about break-even, and it's they're going to want to see higher prices before, or at least the ability to hedge at higher prices before they re-engage with the drilling. So what the oil price really needs is improving sentiment towards global growth, and we're perhaps not quite there yet, but at least the $55 area is holding. What I find particularly interesting is that the Norwegian government and the Saudi Arabian government have pretty much come to the conclusion that weakness in the oil price is structural in nature. That's, I think, part of the reason why Saudi Arabia is so eager can't talk and chew gum. When we look at the Saudi Arabian stock market index, then it has been pulling back rather violently over the course of the last few months. But that is potentially in anticipation of this massive IPO, because it is going to represent a huge source of additional new supply on the market, and people are probably selling ahead of that event, on the one hand because of that additional supply, and on the other to raise cash so that they can invest in it. So that is part of the reason why we're seeing the weakness here. But of course, what it is also suggestive of is that Saudi Arabia believes that the best years are behind it in terms of their production of oil. Oil, of course, is going to remain an incredibly important commodity for the foreseeable future for the global economy, but that is perhaps most important for emerging markets. And while the lower bound for the range in oil is around $55 or $50 on West Texas Intermediate, the upper bound is somewhere around $80. And the less volatility we see in oil prices is most beneficial for consuming nations, particularly in emerging markets. That's certainly true for countries like China. It's equally true for countries like India. And India is an increasingly large consumer of oil. Well, the Nifty index is continuing to steady from above this 11,000 area. And then, of course, the banking index is steadying from around this 30,000 area. Now, if we look at the constituents of the banks index, then we can see that, for example, Kotak Mahindra has been one of the best performers, whereas Yes Bank has been one of the worst. But it's not giving us the weightings. It's the state-owned banks have been the better performers, and of course the Axis Bank, which is a private bank, but a privately held bank, has also been among the best performers. There is a liquidity crisis, however, in the shadow banking sector, and the big question is what the government is eventually going to do in order to curtail the risk that the downtrend we're seeing in some of the housing finance companies, what kind of risk that has for the wider economy. There is certainly less demand for high-priced housing, and that is part of the reason why we're getting this decline, but it's primarily a liquidity crisis. And India is a high-growth market. They need a liquidity-rich environment in order to promote economic growth. The fact that manufacturing is increasingly getting priced out of China does represent a massive potential growth market for India, but they are going to need liquidity in order to take maximum advantage of it. And this dearth of liquidity in the market today, which is contributing to this shadow banking problem, is obviously an issue. We're probably going to have to see some bankruptcies, but the end game is probably going to be a bad bank being set up by the RBI in order to take some of these bad loans off the books of some of the weaker banking sector companies. Then when we think about other countries that benefit from less volatility in energy prices, well, Japan is clearly one of those. And the Nikkei today was up another 265 points. It is clearly now moving through the 22,000 point level. It is benefiting from less safe haven demand for the yen. And the yen, the dollar has moved on to a new high against the yen and broken the downtrend. It was a little bit softer in here today, but it does look increasingly likely that the dollar will be able to push up and out of this range. Now, broadly speaking, the dollar has been weakening over the course of the last couple of weeks. It has a history of not sustaining upward breaks, and the most recent of those tested the 100-point level. The big question is how well the dollar is going to find support in the region of this 98 level, which represents the region of or the sequence of higher reaction lows. Alternatively, whether it comes back down another point and tests the region of the trend mean. The strength of the dollar has been one of the factors that has contributed to less liquidity on the global stage. The slowdown in China, and particularly the Chinese government's reluctance to press on the accelerator in terms of monetary stimulus, is an additional factor. And then, of course, the trade war and tariffs have been an additional factor. These are all important considerations in isolation, but when we take it in unison, then that is at least certainly part of the rationale for why we have a slowing global economic scenario. We're going to have to see these potential, or these points, starting to improve in order to conclude that we can get back onto a growth footing for the global economy. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.